It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 254. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we got a lot to get into here over the next few minutes. And joining me, as they do every week, although we're not recording this podcast on a Sunday night, as we normally do, because we were all heavily involved in the worst Super Bowl in recorded human history. So we figured we'd do this on Monday night. Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, of course, you know as the head guy from The Good Fight. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Hey, Justin, how you doing, pal?
Didn't watch the Super Bowl. Watched Russian Doll on Netflix instead. Fantastic. Highly recommended viewing experience.
What's that about?
It's tremendous. Yeah. You know, I went and covered the Super Bowl with Philly.com a couple of years ago, and it was the Super Bowl where Peyton Manning, when he was playing for the Broncos, fumbled the ball into the end zone on like the first play of the game against the Seahawks, and the rest of the game was just like an utter just crap fest.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Pounding the Broncos, an utterly uninteresting Super Bowl. And early reports came in on this year's before I was watching. And I just, you know, my senses went off. And I was like, you know what? This just doesn't – I wasn't excited to begin with. And this seems like it's not going the way that anybody would want it to go. So, Russian Doll, terrific show. It's it's like Groundhog's Day, but with, a different spin on somebody dying and reliving the same day.
Wow, it sounds like The Edge of Tomorrow, that Tom Cruise movie where he was kept reliving the same like battle over and over again. He had to keep doing it until he got it right, which was actually a really good movie.
Yeah, got elements of that, except she falls down a staircase a bunch of times instead of like aliens.
Different way to go.
All
right.
I'm Liz Rocher, and I saw the trailer this weekend.
Yes.
And it was...
How did Liz get in here?
I don't know.
Crawled in through a vent. I saw the trailer this weekend. It looked incredible. I wanted to watch it immediately, but it was like 2 a.m.
It's tremendous.
I'll have to check it out. You said it's on, is it on Netflix or Hulu, or is it on actual television?
It's on Netflix, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, because nobody watches actual television anymore. I mean, that's just, you're just ridiculous.
Actual television is where the Super Bowl was. Come on, nobody's watching that.
Yeah, and we knew that how bad an idea that was. Don't forget to follow Liz on Twitter, at Liz Rocher. And Liz was on Super Bowl duty last night for Yahoo Sports because Liz was handling all of the many commercials and the reaction to all the commercials as they were coming in. And we're going to kind of just get into that a little bit towards the very end of the podcast. And we're going to talk about free agency. We're going to talk about some MLB Network position rankings and where some Phillies fit into some of those. And so the Wall of Fame nominees are up, and right now they're asking Phillies fans to trim it down to 5, and we'll get into the candidates coming up here in just a few minutes as well. But we're not going to dwell on this for too much here because I think a lot's been said on it already, and you know, some of the facts are still kind of in dispute with this whole thing, but we would be remiss if we didn't at least touch on the Gabe Kapler situation and what went on, the report that came out in the Washington Post late on Friday night. And really, what we're going to be kind of reacting to is the response that Gabe Kapler had that he released on his website. And, you know, guys, this was just one of those stories where, you know, there's no good that's coming out of it. You know, it's sad and it's depressing and it's awful. And, you know, an explanation was proffered here by Gabe Kapler and his handling of the situation when he was the head of player personnel, not player personnel, when he was the head of the Dodgers minor league organization. And you know, it's tough to talk about. And Justin, let me start with you on this, just because as the head guy at The Good Fight, I know we were trying to be really careful with how he went about reporting this story, even just recapping what the Washington Post had to report originally. And then, of course, also publishing Gabe Kapler's response. We wanted to make sure that we were just kind of putting out there what people knew, what was in the police reports, all this kind of stuff, and Kapler's response to it. And I guess my first question is, what is just your general response to Kapler's response to the initial Washington Post story?
Well, he confirmed through like his own admission a lot of the stuff that were raising eyebrows as far as his response to receiving the information about the alleged victim getting assaulted in the spring training hotel with the Dodgers minor leaguers. And I mean, look, there's no pro sports franchise in the world where a player development director gets a message like that and picks up the phone and calls the cops. And I don't say that as a defense of Kapler. I say it as a testament to why we have to have these conversations, because these, you know, these companies pay good money to people to insulate themselves from assault and sexual assault cases rather than, you know, do the right thing and get law enforcement involved. But once it became clear that the team wasn't going to go to the cops, you know, this is where things get messy. And you know what? Kapler probably could have gotten away with like blending in with all the faceless executives who didn't truly care that this happened. But then he organized this ham-fisted group therapy session as if the alleged victim would be willing to sit at a table with the guy who videotaped her getting beaten and posted it on Snapchat, as if this underage runaway is somehow responsible for helping to make this baseball player a better person because he thought it'd be funny to expand the audience of her humiliation. And he was the director of player development, and this was an absolutely backwards way to try and develop his players. There are details and probably entire parts of this we'll never know, but what we do know is stupid enough that, yeah, you know, Kapler may have been following the rules, like he says, but that's not really enough to clear him of any missteps in this. We may have nothing but a faraway view of all these things when it comes to, like, the Phillies and players and everything, but, you know, we talk... That just means if something by Kapler's own admission is true and it does reach us, it's going to shape our perception of him. And this does not make me look at Gabe Kapler in a positive light.
Liz, I'm going to get your thoughts on it as well.
I think I'm just disappointed. I mean, I'm a lot of things, but I'm disappointed that it's really hard to pinpoint. I'm disappointed in a lot of things. I'm disappointed at how quickly people have taken his statement and just completely believed every word, paying no attention to any other reporting that's been done. I'm disappointed in Gabe Kapler. I feel like there is another story out there about the sexual assault of a maid at a hotel by a Dodgers minor leaguer. You know, we have some grounding for how he would react to a sexual assault, which, you know, he says he did not know about. You know, I have no reason to not believe him, but this whole situation, it all just feels fishy. I'm disappointed in Kapler. I'm disappointed that no one at any point, Gabe Kapler included, really put the victim first. You know, it's not even put the victim first, but bothered to think about what she might be thinking or feeling, to sympathize or empathize with her at all. Like, if Kapler had taken a second to think about this, think about how she might feel sitting at a table with people who had allegedly done these things to her. How could he have suggested that? At no point did her feelings enter his mind, it seems. And that is really upsetting to me. You know, Justin said, she does not owe anyone anything. No one in this world has any responsibility to be a lesson to anyone else. It's all our responsibilities to learn our own lessons. You know, Kapler said that, you know, something about wanting to help him, his decision making, whoever it was that was still in the system. I'd love more details. What did he do? What did they do for this person that took part in this you know, that allegedly, of course, took part in this. Like, what did they do? I'm really upset that he didn't include any details about that, because that's important. That's important. He's essentially admitting, you know, his comments sort of give credence to the fact that all of this happened. And that there are no details offered is frustrating to me, because he was detailed about a lot of things in this statement, and that he didn't really offer anything for how they helped, they sought to help this person that was important enough to their system that they kept instead of releasing like they did the other guy. You know, what's being done? I there was no explanation for that. I feel like there's more. There's got to be more. Isn't there? There's not maybe to this story, but there's more out there. This is not the last we've heard of it.
I'm sure there's more to this story.
I mean, I guess the bottom line with all of this, and it's a matter of, you know, who at a certain point when you've got this much bureaucracy, there's a certain amount of time when this is quote unquote your problem. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's the issue that we're running into here with Kapler's involvement, is that it seems as though, based on what he had said and what was in the police report, is that there's a certain amount of time where he was in contact with the grandmother and the woman, and or the girl, I guess we should call her a 17-year-old girl at the time, you know, and it's you know, there was a moment where as from what he knew and what he understood happened was two girls beat up this other girl, and one of his players took a video of it. And his thinking is, well, my guess is none of my players actually did anything, you know, with the exception of videotaping this whole thing, which is terrible in and of itself. But
that's the thing. Yeah, like he's complicit in this crime because he's just taking a video of two women beating another woman who was just sick on a bed who they gave alcohol to.
And that's the thing. The bottom line here, and hopefully this is, and I don't know that it will be, but if anything comes out of this, teams need to understand from the top on down, no matter what time of year it is, whether it's in season and you can actually have the ability to suspend player or not, whether or not you actually have the ability to, you know, mess with a player's, baseball career. Because the bottom line is when you learn of anything happening like this, call the police. And I think that's the one thing Kapler said in his response, is it's fair to ask, you know, why I didn't contact police. I think he is even admitting.
Did he offer an explanation? For that?
The explanation was that he handled it according to team policy. Team policy has to change. And you've got, and I don't know. No one knows how hard he pushed back, if at all, to say, you know, we really probably should contact the police and let them sort this out. I maybe he thought it was her responsibility to contact the police if she wanted to do that. And I think that's what he said. That is actually what he said in his response. You know, he said, you know, we felt it was. I should really pull it up so I make sure that I get it
right. I have it. What he said was,
okay.
Above all, the victim's grandmother asked for my reassurance that I wouldn't turn the victim in before the victim would share what had happened. After the victim shared her description of the night, she sent me a follow-up email and said she didn't want to talk about it any further. My feeling at the time was that the victim should have the right to make the decision about what she wanted to do. Perhaps I should have taken it out of her hands, but my intention was to respect the victim and her wishes.
The phrasing "turn her in" sounds real weird, because what would she be turned in for? She was the victim of a crime.
Well, she was a runaway, I think, at the time, and it's possible. He's saying is that she didn't want to be returned back to wherever it is she ran away from.
I guess.
And she was drinking underage, I guess.
Yeah, that's part of it too. So I mean, there's so many parts of this where, you know, it seems like almost nobody did the right thing.
Nobody took the victim. I mean, it looks like Child Services did, because they said they were pressing charges on her behalf, whether she really wanted them to or not, because a crime had been committed. And
whether the sexual assault actually happened or not, she was physically assaulted. there's no way around it. You know, an assault took place. You're right.
An assault took place, and two baseball players were involved in it, either directly or on the fringes. Like, that, God forbid that anyone get punished, you know? God forbid anyone but the victim get punished in some way.
In professional sports, we hear so many stories like this, and the instinct is always to not take the side of the victim. That's never to act in the victim's best interest, which is what we're saying here. And as fans of the Phillies, we would like to be able to think that when the time came, the guy who's now managing this team did what he could to break that trend. And it just doesn't seem like he did.
That's just disappointing.
I will say, too, it's interesting the Phillies' reaction to this story, which is to say they haven't said anything publicly about it. There was a piece, I think, in Philly.com today where sources were saying that the Phillies are standing behind Kapler and he has their full support. But it is interesting to me. I mean, maybe a statement by the Phillies saying that publicly wouldn't do anybody any good. But I do think it is interesting that Kapler released this on his own website. And in the Philly.com piece, it says that he wanted to release this on his own website and not through the Phillies. I don't really know what the distinction would be, why that would be an advantage one way or the other.
I have a theory, at least.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think part of it is Kapler's trying to be respectful of an organization that he's with that is not involved in whatever's happening, which I appreciate. Yeah. I also think if it's not entirely Kapler, it's also the Phillies, because Kapler has been implicated in some other things beyond what we've talked about. There's, from what I remember, a federal investigation happening into the Dodgers' illegal human, you know, I think it's trafficking in Latin American baseball players.
The signing of international players. But no, you're right. There's human trafficking involved. We've seen court cases where people were convicted. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think maybe there's some desire to not, maybe, let's not be seen supporting him too obviously at this moment. Let's see where this goes.
Well, I will say, too, that Justin, this is not an offseason where, you know, I think it's especially this offseason, coming off of the very interesting first year that Kapler had as manager on the field, with the way the things started and the way things finished up with the team, that, you know, Kapler is a manager who already has some people in the fan base unsure of him, at the very least. And this just is not helpful to him, you know, taking over. This adds pressure to him this season, not to perform on the field, but to show that he is the right person to be the manager of this team. And I think it probably would be the wrong move to dismiss Kapler for this. But like Liz said, there are some things here that are accumulating, and this isn't good for him.
I mean, I would understand it if they did, but I do not expect them to. I think it's a little optimistic to think that the people who have a problem with Gabe Kapler as a manager and the way he goes about things are the same people who have a problem with him about off the field things. Mm-hmm. I think more often than not, and this is speaking in the broadest possible terms, but I think more often than not, you'd find those are just not necessarily the same people. I think they do both contribute to the idea of maybe he's not the guy for this job. And here we are, one full, you know, year of Gabe Kapler being the manager of the Phillies. And there's been this much turmoil already. And the Phillies have really, gone out of their way to make sure, you know, they're not going to let you know anything about what they're doing as far as free agents go. You know, they were going to be airtight about this unless they absolutely could not be. And that's exactly essentially what they've done. Like you mentioned, even in that Philly.com piece, I believe the way it was phrased was like, sources tell us that the Phillies are standing behind this, their manager, but you're not going to hear them say that publicly.
Yeah. I mean, Gabe Kapler is a friend of the podcast. I've talked to him a number of times. I very much would like to see Kapler have success here in this town as the manager of the Phillies, both on the field and off the field. But, you know, we have to be realistic about what's going on here. And you know, I think the statement that he put out was what he needed to do, whether it did not answer all the questions, as you mentioned, Liz. There may be questions that he can't answer. I don't know if there's question. It's difficult for us to talk about, and I don't feel comfortable making a hard assessment with this whole situation. I'm just looking for these situations to kind of play out at this point and to kind of see what happens next with some of these other issues going on. And, you know, I just think the landscape right now is looking such that Kapler has some work to do to regain some trust among people who are not happy with his what's been going on off the field and the things that have been going on the field. And I think all three of us are kind of in that camp at the moment.
And I think you can conclude with baseball right around the corner that if you so choose to, you can still root for the Phillies without rooting for Gabe Kapler. If that's the position you find yourself in after news like this surfaces.
Yeah. And I'll say, I don't want him fired. Mostly because I don't think the Phillies are going to do it. And it's tremendously unclear what happened. It's really tremendously.
That's true.
I mean, and like I said, it just gives me all of this gives me a bad feeling. It makes me think less of Gabe Kapler. And while I don't want him fired, I also now don't really care if he stays or goes. He has a lot of work to do to regain me. And it's not really even about on the field. It's not about what he does on the field for me anymore. He's going to have to show, I don't know, something somewhere, somehow, for me to actually give a shit about whether he's managing the Phillies or not. I'm just sort of done.
Well, I'm hoping that this turns into a situation where he can learn from it and other organizations can learn from it. And that hopefully the 17-year-old girl who obviously as a runaway, this came to the police's attention after she was, you know, picked up for shoplifting. I hope she's getting better. I hope she's whatever she's gone through. You know, let's hold some thoughts for her, who again is the victim, is the real victim in all of this stuff. No matter what actually happened, we know that something bad happened, and just kind of hope that she's getting the help that she needs, whatever that might happen to be. And so, you know, that ends our clumsy, fumbling response to Gabe Kapler's response to this situation, because this is difficult to talk about, and you know, it's not something we want to talk about, but it is something we felt like we had to address here on Hittin' Season. And so when we come back, we're gonna get into some baseball stuff here, look at free agency, we're gonna get into some of MLB Network's position rankings and take a look at where a few Phillies ranked in those top 10 rankings. We'll do that coming up right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back with Hittin' Season, and we're going to get into the free agent market, and I promised that we wouldn't talk much about Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, and really, we're not going to be talking about those guys specifically in this next section, because we're still waiting, and, you know, nothing has actually happened yet.
We'll never not be waiting.
Waiting for Godot took less time than this, we sit here and we continue to wait. I did want to talk a little bit about the Padres, and we've addressed them a little bit in the past, but you know, the Padres are the team and the rumor that just won't go away, and maybe it's just because it's something different. You know, it gives writers Liz a chance to look at a new team and look at a new roster and practice photoshopping Bryce Harper into the new Padres brown and yellow uniforms that they're going to be wearing starting the year after this one. And
does somebody do that?
What's that? They're going to do that. They
care enough to do that? Wow.
Oh, yeah. You know, people just have way too much time on their hands. And so
the Philadelphia Police Department is photoshopping onto a cop's body. I think people can make time for this.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, people are imagining the Padres. And, you know, I just feel like, to me, Liz, this is more... I don't think the Padres are really interested in Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. This seems to
<They're>
me...
not. No.
Yeah, right? It's a joke, right? This is all just like kind of like a wanting to show fans, well, we got close, or, you know, we're starting to get back into it. But they're not really ready to commit the kind of years and money to Bryce Harper in that market, just coming out of the debt that they've been in with a terrible Eric Hosmer contract still on the books. This is going crazy. People writing articles trying to work Bryce Harper onto the Padres, right?
Okay, so everyone's bored and desperate. Let's start there. That is how this starts. Everyone's bored and desperate. I think the agents are also bored / desperate. I think that either this is, the Padres thinking they smell blood in the water, or, they can see what they can do, maybe appeal to them. You know, they think that maybe, I can't imagine they're actually serious. Or maybe, one of the agents asked a favor, like, hey, could you just pretend for a couple of weeks that you're interested? Maybe get one of the guys who actually have money and a chance to win to spend a little bit of that money for a larger chance to win. I really don't think this is anything. Like, it's something. It's not the same, 2 to 3 teams, in every single article you read. But it's also the Padres, they're coming off of that financial article that they allowed that made them look kind of bad. Like, I'm amazed that they allowed that, they did that, because I feel like someone from the inside of Major League Baseball sat someone else down and gave them a talking to, because they opened up their books willingly, which was stupid. I wish every team would do it, but
I was going to say, we've asked every team to do that. And yeah, the Padres did it, but it was pretty dumb.
They did it willingly.
Way to go, idiots.
Everyone's going to ask, what are you doing? So I feel like this could also be a direct response to that. Now, God, everyone's looking. Now we have to do something. Dad's mad.
I mean, it's been so long, Justin, since San Diego has been really any kind of conversation piece in baseball. They've only made the playoffs a couple of times since they went to the World Series, and I guess it was 96 or something like that.
It was 8.
It might have been. I think it was 96. I don't remember now. Maybe it was 98. I think you're right. It is 98. And either way, it doesn't matter. I mean, I forgot. You forgot. We all forgot, because it's the Padres. Nobody pays attention to the Padres, and
everyone forgets them.
Yeah, and I guess that's why it would make sense for the Padres to try and go get, especially Bryce Harper, the face of baseball. I mean, that puts San Diego on the map in a big, big way. But if you're Bryce Harper, why? I mean, aside from the weather being really nice and it kind of being closer to your home in Las Vegas, I think people make way too big a deal out of players playing near their home, their off-season home. Most players play really far away from their off-season home. I mean, it just doesn't seem to me like these are enough pieces put in place for San Diego to really be considered a threat.
I mean, what hints of where a guy will go do you have when that guy is locked inside a bunker, not telling you any of his thoughts?
Well, he met with them. Well, that's why we're talking about this. He apparently met with the senior Padres officials.
Sure, but I'm saying taco, and this was an excuse.
You said, oh, why do they always assume they want to play in their off-season home? I mean, that's like one of the two things that people assume is influencing players who aren't talking about openly where they want to play, mm-hmm. that and how much money they could potentially receive from somewhere. By the way, that 1998 World Series was so for it lasted 4 days, and the Padres immediately lost to the Yankees. I had to take.
Oh, I knew they lost to the Yankees. I just for some reason.
So did I. 4 days long, deeply uninteresting.
Wow.
So stupid.
Wow.
Just don't even. Just a dumb World Series. The Padres they crack me up. Padres they surface like a cat hunting a bird that's out the window, like taking themselves very seriously, and that CBS. Sports article that we're kind of talking about when we talk about this lists all the high profile players that they've sort of been involved in, with Shohei Ohtani and Jake Arrieta and Noah Syndergaard and Jacob DeGrom and Chris Archer and now Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, JT Real Muto. Like, it's hilarious.
They weren't serious about most of them, though.
Yeah, but they didn't get them. That's what's so funny, because when the moment to strike comes, like the cat thing, there's this pane of glass between them and whatever they're rumored to actually want, and they can't possibly get it. So I just don't take them seriously. How can you, as a high-profile free agent signing or even trade entity, even though they've got that extremely fertile farm system? Because they're either seriously gun-shy or just seriously criminally short on funds, which is also hard to believe as a professional sports franchise, even though, like we said, you know, we now know they've had all that debt over the recent years. But if the Padres were to swoop in and like make a fool of me and sign Harper for saying all that, I would have to like tip my cap to them at least, because that scenario would bum me out. Because I don't think Machado wants to play here. And though the Phillies would, I believe, go pedal to the metal for Machado if Harper was off the market, I feel right now that the Phillies and Harper are closer to being a match. And if the Padres come in at the last second, snag one of those two guys who I think actually has considered Philadelphia an option this whole time, while Machado hems and haws and hopes his phone vibrating in his pocket is the Yankees finally calling him back, then like that puts the Phillies in a weaker spot. If the Padres land Machado, then I think that actually pushes the Phillies and Harper closer together, potentially. So that they just don't worry me, because how many rumors just like this one have been tossed onto the tire fire of offseason news thus far? And the Padres' reputation is what I was just saying, that of a team willing to spend $144 million on Eric Hosmer and unable to find itself in any place higher than second for players another tier up talent-wise. That same CBS Sports article said, The question is, if all of this proves to be simply the Padres doing their due diligence in hopes of getting a low-ball deal on a star player or just simple misdirection, how will Harper and Machado signing elsewhere go over for fans who got their hopes up? And if all of this is buzz over all these big names ends with the Padres getting nothing, how will a smart and oft-burned fan base react? And my question is, why wouldn't Padres fans, you know, both of them, already feel that way given the sheer volume of high-profile talent the team doesn't have? Like, they have Eric Hosmer and Will Myers to show for all this.
They're not that stupid. Like, these are human beings. They're not cabbages. Like,
I think human beings are pretty stupid.
No, but I'm just saying, like, this is a level of baseball. Like, getting your hopes up over and over and over again over something that's clearly not going to, over not even just about winning, but about a free agent possibly choosing you, you know, or the team who has, you know, done so many stupid things, trading for a player that might make sense. No, these are. Most of these people have brains. Like, I sincerely hope that none of them are that stupid. Like, none of them got their hopes up. No one, is anyone in San Diego getting their hopes up for this? No. Well, no.
What good is it to get yourself involved in negotiations without the intention of actually signing one of the players?
Of winning it. Yeah, knowing you have to outbid the Phillies, you know?
Do you really think that like one news cycle in which you are involved is like you know what? The Padres are making a name for themselves. They didn't get their guy, but you know what? I signed up for season tickets anyway because I heard they were in the mix for Harper late in the offseason. That just doesn't seem like a payoff that's worth the attention.
And here's the thing, even if they get Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, how much does it really help the Padres? I think it does. It helps them in a PR sense, in that, like I mentioned before, it does put them on the map. But I'm looking at a piece on MLB.com from Andrew Simon where he's talking about how would this affect different teams' playoff impacts. And looking at the Padres, Fangraphs Steamer projections have them at 76-86, which would be tied for fourth in the NL West. Giving either one of those guys would give them about a 4-win bump and doesn't even push them past, like, say, the, you know, 80 wins, 81 wins, which leaves them out of the periphery, which, as opposed to the Phillies, who are projected at 79-83, you're looking at more like a 5-win bump based on who the Phillies have at some of these positions. And you're talking about 85 wins now, which, according to Steamer, gets them right around the territory of the Mets for the second National League wildcard spot. So, again, this would, for 2019 anyway, certainly seem to indicate the Phillies would, they would benefit more than the Padres would. But as we all know, especially when you're talking about Harper as like the face of baseball, it's more than just about on-field stuff. So again, makes sense for the Padres to be aggressive here. But at the end of the day, the Phillies can outbid whoever they want for whichever one of these guys they actually want to get to. And I know it feels dangerous that this is going on so long for the Phillies. It just feels like make the offer that gets them here. You know, just make the, I know they're trying to get a deal here, and but and we don't know exactly how much money they could potentially save by going the route they're going right now. But for my money, pick the guy you want, make the offer that's going to get him in here, and just get him in here. You know, is that crazy, Liz, to just, you know, if it's $350 million for Bryce Harper, just make the offer.
Not to cut you off, Liz, but I've written, John, maybe three different $2,500 word blog posts with that message being kind of just the only part.
I mean, it's just, I don't understand. I mean, and they're not going to sign both guys. I mean, we've said it over and over again. If the plan is to sign both, they're not going to sign both guys. I just don't see a scenario where that's actually realistic. So just sign one of them. Pick the one you want and sign one.
Yeah. I mean, they're just, we're at the point where nothing's happening because the players just aren't happy with the offers they've received. And I've said it before. For teams, the season will begin. They don't have a choice. The games will start to be played. Spring training will be over. You know, the baseball will count. For a baseball player, the season doesn't start until he starts playing baseball. That's when his season begins. Whatever happens before doesn't really matter. And so they can, you know, teams can choose to get Bryce Harper and Manny Machado on their teams and moving forward with, you know, with everything, so they can start baseball with the best foot forward, or they can keep fucking around. You know, I mean, we're looking now at what's most important. Like, in the next couple of weeks, if nothing happens, we're going to have to start saying, what is more important, winning or the difference in money? And it's an important question, and it's one that should be asked loudly and by people who have access to people who can give answers, because that's a question that needs to be answered. What is more important right now? Is building a winning baseball team the most important thing, or trying to save however much money, you know, between asking price and, you know, whatever you're willing to pay, whatever, you know, amount of money you've agreed on or you've agreed on and are now lowballing? Like, just figure it out. If the most important thing is saving money, then just tell us and we can all move on with our lives.
It's February 4th. If nothing happens in the next few weeks, I'm going to walk off Morgan's Pier into the Delaware, and that'll just be my baseball season.
Sounds good to me, my friend.
Your death sounds good to me, my friend.
That's right.
We'll record it. We'll live cast.
We'll do a live podcast, right, of Justin testing the thin ice of the Delaware River.
We're looking for a good way to get podcast people together. That could be a way to do it. We'll give away t-shirts and stuff. Oh, we all deserve the sweet release of death with all of this. Anyway, let's talk about these MLB Network position rankings that they've been doing here over the last few weeks. And, you know,
I was just going to say, why not?
Why not? You know, let's make that smooth transition from one topic to another.
No, then let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, because until we get Machado or Harper, they're all a part of the different lists, but we don't have them yet. They don't exist to us yet. So we can talk about the guys who currently exist on this team. And what a quaint notion to talk about players who actually are part of the team right now. Among their first base rankings, here is how they have their top 10 first basemen. Again, this is according to the MLB Network analysts who work there. Paul Goldschmidt is top in their rankings, followed by Freddie Freeman, Joey Votto third, Max Muncy fourth, Anthony Rizzo fifth, Matt Olson of the Oakland A's sixth, Justin Smoke seventh, Jesus Aguilar eighth, Rhys Hoskins comes in at number nine, and Jose Abreu at number 10. I would have Hoskins ahead of some of these guys. Justin, I'll throw it to you first there. Obviously, I think you feel the same way.
I'd probably put him between Rizzo and Olson, right? Mm-hmm. That seems like a good spot for him. I mean, I actually bothered to look at the numbers, and Matt Olson and Justin Smoke did not have... Is this based on just like last year or their careers to date?
You know, I think it's their careers to date. I don't think they're just talking about these are the best first basemen as far as we're concerned.
Even so, Justin Smoak alone over Rhys Hoskins? Is it because Hoskins spent so much time in left field and not at first base? I guess that has something to do with it.
That was going to be my thing. Like, how much first base did he play last year? That he's even on this list is pretty great. The only reason he's here is because the Phillies finally traded Carlos Santana. Like, he wasn't really a first baseman up until like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I like how I'm getting all red-faced and flustered over this, but we're talking about the MLB Network generating these lists, which are annually problematic.
Who last year heading into the season did not have Aaron Nola among their top 25 starting pitchers when they were putting this list together? So
they just used a dartboard, really.
Yeah, I mean, and I do like, Liz, that I think Brian Kenny had Rhys Hoskins, I think, right about where Justin said after Anthony Rizzo. Is that about where you would have him as well?
Yeah, I'd put him. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, in a perfect world, I would put him there. He's definitely better than Justin Smoak and Matt Olson. I don't think he's better than Anthony Rizzo right now. But also, I'd love to see him play some first base and prove me wrong.
I think Rhys Hoskins is give Max Muncy a run for his money as well. Like, Muncy had a terrific season last year, but part of the reason it was so fun is because it came out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I think
right, and he couldn't even get on the field in the World Series to hit against left-handers. That's how crazy. Remember, I was raising holy hell about that. I mean, here's a guy who burst onto the scene, was one of your best sluggers. He can't get on the field. They're playing David Freese over him.
That's right.
Dave Roberts has some confidence. I always feel like when he gets into the World Series, he gets confidence issues. Like, he doesn't trust every decision he's made up to that point, and he's like, oh God, he's just feeling for anything familiar.
Yeah, no, the only guy I think I would have above Rhys Hoskins here on this list is, I think, Jesus Aguilar. You should probably have above Rhys Hoskins on this list. Aguilar was a more consistent power hitter last year than Hoskins was. Hoskins is so up and down. I think Hoskins has room. I think Hoskins has the potential to be a better player than Aguilar, but Aguilar is a really good power hitting first baseman. I would probably have this Goldschmidt, Freeman, Votto, Muncy. I would probably have it Goldschmidt, Freeman, Votto, Rizzo, Aguilar, Muncy, Hoskins is probably how I would have it. And then everybody else kind of slides in after that.
I'm looking at this now, and I think I would go Freeman, Votto, Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Aguilar, Hoskins, Muncy, Olson, Smoke, Abreu. Ha! Yes, I did it. Sorry.
I was rearranging
the names in my head. That was
on the fly.
I have a headache and a bloody nose, but I got there. So thank you.
I personally will take the average of both of yours.
Okay, coward. Fair enough. Very
coward.
Well. Good.
Join on the ice, Liz, you coward.
Suck it.
Maybe we'll make Liz rearrange all the starting pitchers here next. So we're going to go over this. We'll go over the starting pitcher list here. And they have Max Scherzer, number one, Chris Sale, number two, Jacob DeGrom, three, Corey Kluber, four, Justin Verlander, five. Aaron Nola comes in at number six with Clayton Kershaw, seven, Luis Severino, eight, Carlos Carrasco, nine, and Blake Snell, the American League Cy Young Award winner, at number 10. Liz, you know, Nola at six here, ahead of Kershaw. I'm kind of surprised he's ahead of Kershaw here on this list. Of course, you know, Kershaw has had his ups and downs with injuries and stuff over the last couple of years, and he was not super dominant Kershaw last year. Nola finished third in the National League Cy Young. It kind of makes sense that he's wound up where he is. This looks right to me.
I think this is perfect. I do. I would put it, I mean, based on last year, like, looking at career overall, Kershaw is ahead of Nola, no question, but this is just last year, and Kershaw has spent the last couple of years looking very human. It's time for someone else to pick up the inhuman, you know, invulnerable mantle, and maybe it should be Aaron Nola. I love this list. I mean, there's no way I could put him ahead of Verlander or Kluber or Jacob deGrom or Chris Sale or Max Scherzer. Like, plain and simple, Nola is just not better than any of those pitchers, but you can make an argument for why he's better than everyone else behind him.
Justin, how concerned are you about maybe Nola taking a small step back this year? I'm a little bit worried that last year was like his career year, and, you know, he's not going to get quite as much luck on batted balls and not giving up home runs and all that kind of stuff. How concerned are you that maybe he takes a little bit of a step backwards this year and maybe isn't a top six pitcher in baseball?
The Phillies aren't taking steps backward anymore. We're not doing that this year. That's not. No, we did that last year. That, no, that was last backwards. Year's point. Right, we don't good. Do that now. This is 2019.
I'm not running the blog anymore. that's over.
Those
now.
Are different times, and this is this time. And no, to answer your question, I'm not concerned about it because I do too. Predict that. I don't think that was like a fluke, but it was some otherworldly pitching at times performed by Aaron Nola. So I don't expect him to pitch at that level.
Fans should be ready for it. In other words, right?
Yeah, it's not a concern.
Yeah. Okay, mentally prepare.
Not a concern, but an expectation. As far as this list goes, yeah, I'm pretty okay with where he is on it. But I mean, I'm a little surprised. Jacob DeGrom is the best pitcher in baseball. I'd put him past Max Scherzer and Chris Sale. Frankly, maybe it's just because we've seen a lot more of him, but he is in my mind. He entered that state during this season, unquestionably.
I think you're right. I didn't even think about that. Like all the pitchers ahead of Nola were just kind of a blob of better than Nola.
Just a blur of the Phillies swinging and missing at them. Yeah, I agree.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, I agreed. And I got to say, Justin Verlander's late career surge here has been among the more impressive. He's really been amazing to be able to compete. I agree with you. DeGrom would probably be my number one, followed closely by Scherzer and then, the rest of the group there. One other Philly made the top 10 list in right field, and that's one of their new offseason acquisitions, Andrew McCutchen in right field. Their right field rankings, and based on what they, the pitcher rankings that they came up with, my guess is they're just totally looking ahead to 2019 and trying to say who will be the best at this position this year. So whether that more heavily weighs last year's numbers or the last few years' numbers, I think these are just subjective opinions. But regardless, they have Aaron Judge.
Is that why you're
saying
right. it? This list doesn't
essentially.
Really
okay. Essentially. You have Aaron Judge at number one, Mookie Betts at two, Christian Yelich 3, Mitch Haniger 4, Bryce Harper at 5, Brandon Nimmo at 6, Yasiel Puig 7, Andrew McCutchen 8, Nicholas Castellanos at 9, and Stephen Piscotty at number 10. I can't argue about McCutchen being where he is. I actually am surprised he made the top 10 list, but when I see Piscotty at the number 10 spot, I'm like, okay, I guess he has to be in the top 10. But how, in what world, do you have Aaron Judge ahead of Mookie Betts in a list of top players at any position? I mean, Mookie Betts is the second best player in baseball right now. There's no other way around it. I mean, that's silly putting Aaron Judge in front of Mookie Betts.
I'd put Judge behind. I mean, I had to remember for a minute who Mitch Haniger was.
I too just looked him up.
Yes, and I looked at
really
his numbers,
good Mariners outfielder. Yeah,
I looked at his numbers. And I'm like, oh, so considering the year that Harper had, is relatively atypical. He should be ahead of Harper. I would put Judge probably behind Mitch Haniger or just right ahead of him.
The guy I didn't know who he was.
Whoever the hell that is. I would 100% put him behind Mookie Betts and Christian Yelich. Like, what is Judge doing at the top of that list? Home runs are fun, but in the grand scheme of things, it helps if you can do more.
I got to tell you, I almost welcome this. The just smelling this Yankees homerism in the air from outlets like this just reminds me how fun it was to hate the Yankees, how deeply unsatisfying it is at the end of a season where the Yankees, just beat you into submission and go on and sweep the Padres in four games. But I do just sort of welcome this mentality again, that the Yankees are formidable enough and just people are homering over them enough that they would put Aaron Judge above Mookie Betts, which is like the same kind of thing, putting Max Scherzer over Jacob DeGrom. Like Jacob DeGrom, I mean, again, unquestionable in 2018. Same with Mookie Betts.
Don't overthink this, guys.
Are you kidding
me? One of the best seasons of all time.
And Christian Yelich, my God, especially the second half of his season. In 2018, just leading the league in batting average, which I know we hate, but slugging .598, like there's a reason he was the MVP, and I know this wasn't typical of him even coming into this season. But before, if we're talking about their careers to date, I don't know, man. It's still not really close.
No, that Moving to Milwaukee helped Christian Yelich out something fierce. That
How
was
happy was he to get the hell out of Miami?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. And now, real quick, before we take our last break here, I was trying to think of players that could make the top 10 next year that aren't part of the top 10. And for me, I think the Philly that I think could most easily slide into next year's top 10 is Jorge Alfaro at catcher.
Yep.
If only because the catcher position is a little bit light, but Jorge Alfaro has the potential, if he can cut his strikeout rate down, to be an above average offensive catcher. And we already know the athleticism he has behind the plate, how good he was at framing. If he can make a little bit more contact and he can do a little bit better blocking balls in the dirt, he can be a top 10 catcher, no doubt about it, after this season rolls around. Do you guys have any other potential Phillies? There's a couple others I think you could reasonably argue could creep into the top 10 next year with some even half decent seasons or some slight improvement this year.
I mean, honestly, I feel like the Phillies have a roster full of guys who are potentially the 10th best player at a position. I don't think you're looking at a lot of top five guys, but I think there's a lot of guys who could be fringe members of top 10 lists at specific positions. I think after the season he put forth, I feel meeker the more words I say in this sentence, but I feel like the season he put forth, Michael Franco could potentially be a top 10 third baseman in the National League. Wait, we're talking all of baseball? I'm going to take a step back from this and say maybe he is a top 12 or 13 third baseman in all of baseball. Okay. But certainly Odubel Herrera, I think, could. What this season, I mean, he wasn't bad the whole year. He just kind of slowly got worse and worse and worse throughout the entire season. You know, we're trying to stir word of a comeback just based on the social media posts we've seen of his already this season. But even if you just looked at the offensive statistics you want to see from your center fielder, he was exactly what I just described. He was like 11th, 12th, 13th in the league in the stats you want to see from your center fielder. And having put together a career to this point that was before the end of last year extremely promising, I think that he could very easily, if we saw a return to form, Odubel Herrera, he could get into the top five best center fielders in the game, assuming he's still in the Phillies, or I guess if he's with another team, but we're talking about Phillies players.
Well, when he's as good as he can be, he's an MVP candidate, as we saw last year. Liz, any other thoughts from you on any Phillies you could see moving into a top 10 list in all of baseball?
As I was listening to Justin talk about Odubel Herrera, one of my favorite players, I looked up a few clips of Jorge Alfaro behind the plate just because I miss baseball so much I could weep. and it was just as good as I remembered. And I just can't wait for baseball to actually come back. Like, we all forget how desperate we get this time of year. Like, every year, as soon as baseball's back, we're just like, oh, it's so great. And then a week later, we're like, God, the season's really long, isn't it? So, like, I don't want to, we get so desperate right around this time that we're just like looking at blurry pictures of Odubel Herrera in the outfield like he's Bigfoot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know.
I'm just so excited for baseball to come back, guys.
And we're all like, we're all like, sweet.
Yeah.
I know. We're like, oh, man, from here, it looks like he has more calf definition. How can you tell? Well, this pixel over here.
Yeah, that's right. He does look better, no doubt about it. And I'll say a couple other guys. Sir Anthony Dominguez could move into a top 10 relief pitcher in baseball, I think, this year. And Cesar Hernandez was considered one of the top 10 second basemen in last year's list. And obviously a broken foot kind of messed that all up. But
before he played the whole year with a broken freaking foot.
Yeah. He could, if you know, he stays healthy, he could be a top 10 second baseman again, no problem. All right, we're going to step away, take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Phillies Wall of Fame nominees. An uninspiring list, but it kind of makes for a little bit more of an interesting conversation. So we'll get into that coming up right after this here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. And last thing we're going to jump into here on the podcast this week are the Phillies Wall of Fame nominees. If you go to Phillies.com, you can vote and whittle this list down to five. Right now, we're looking at a list of 10 potential Wall of Fame nominees, and we're going to, the team wants to cut these in half. I guess we could do that, just kind of whittle it down to five, and then at a future podcast, we can pick one or two that we think we would like. But here's the list that they have on the website this year, and there's no Roy Halladay, there's no Ryan Howard, you know, no slam dunks in this list as far as I can tell. You've got Bobby Abreu on the list, Rich Doobie, former Phillies pitching coach, Gene Garber, former Phillies closer from back in the late 70s, Bake McBride, who was a part of those late 70s 1980 championship teams, Scott Rolen, Steve Bedrosian, the 1987 Cy Young Award winner, Jim Fregosi, the manager that took the Phillies to the 93 World Series, Doug Glanville, Placido Polanco, and Manny Trio, again a member of those 1970s and early 80s Phillies teams. So they want to whittle this down to five, guys. Liz, let's start with you. Whittle this down to five for me. Who are the five guys that you would see moving, that you would have move forward?
This is real tough. All right, well, Bobby Abreu, I'd say. I don't know if I'm going to get a lot of pushback from you two on that one.
No, I'm good with Bobby Abreu for sure.
Doug Glanville, because I love him so.
Okay.
I just love Doug Glanville. I'm just a fan.
It's quite all right. You're allowed to. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, this is my five, as opposed to, like, it's not the five most worthiest. It's the five.
No, it's
I
the
want.
Five you would want. Yeah.
Yeah. Doug Glanville, Jim Fregosi for sure. That's three. I'm real torn about Scott Rolen just because he hated it here so much.
See,
yeah, but that's why it's funnier, because then we have to force him to come back.
Force, like, he doesn't have to come back.
Yeah, no,
that would be even funnier. Can you imagine a Wall of Fame ceremony where the guy still hated Philadelphia so much?
Yeah,
he refused to come back.
Yeah.
Who's pulling the sheet off that plaque?
Yeah,
who is doing that at that point?
Do you think they would just take a whiz on it? I mean, like, in
well, then, yeah, I'll say Scott Rolen. Is that four?
I think that's four. Yeah, that would be fun just for the chaos theory. I would root for chaos.
I don't know, for my fifth.
Well, we'll come back to you. We'll circle back to you.
I want to help me fill my fifth slot here.
So, right. So cowardly tonight. So cowardly.
Fight me.
She's not walking out there at all tonight. Yeah, no, I know.
Well, I didn't want to have too many of the same answers as you guys, but I didn't really. I was sort of successful with that. I think Bobby Abreu is your obvious first choice. I think Scott Rolen is an obvious choice, and I picked Doug Glanville because, yeah, he's a tremendous, turned his post playing career into something even more impressive. But at the same time, I'm also just fascinated by the way the Phillies are going to be filling out that era of their history, because. You know, you're always most interested in the version of your favorite team that you saw when you were a kid. And looking back, it does crack me up how uninteresting and bad, or at times like how much they hated each other. The Phillies teams of my youth, which in the post 1993 era was like a bunch of really forgettable teams. So when they put Mike Lieberthal on the Wall of Fame a couple of years ago, it was like, all right, Mike Lieberthal and moving along to the next decade. what do we have next? But, you know, you got Roland, obviously, but, you know, there's the obvious drama involved with that. Glanville, I think, is a great choice from that era because, you know, he never set the world on fire, but he was one of their best players. He filled a necessary role. He was a fast defensive outfielder who could lead off and get on base. I mean, you know, that's great. And he would come back and give like an excellent speech. You know, and that's what you go to a game for, right?
Yeah,
to hear a man speak into a microphone.
Absolutely. Yeah.
To fill out my last two spots, I decided to go old school reliever on it because at the end of the day, nothing is cooler than like a guy with a beard rocking the maroon old school P and, you know, coming out, nailing the bottom of the ninth shut and then just cracking a Coors Light in the dugout. So I went with Gene Garber and Steve Bedrosian to fill it out.
I like both of those picks. I was trying to convince myself on Gene Garber just because I really like the name too. It's a fun name.
Steve Bedrosian, I mean, he's one of the only, correct me if I'm wrong, one of the only relievers to win a Cy Young Award.
One of the very few.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I gotta give it to Bedrock, and I gotta give it to Gene Garber, who shout out to the relief room, has one of the more prominent placements in the Hatboro Phillies reliever shrine, in which he is framed in an oval frame and is right next to you while you're using the powder room.
Well, I will tell you, Justin,
right back at you.
If you guys ever do Black Friday for the Dirty Inning, Gene Garber will make a prominent appearance as the man who basically allowed it to happen.
Oh man, let's get him in there. That's what's so funny about having to pick guys from these eras is that eventually each of them has a particularly heartbreaking or frustrating or iconically terrible moment that is still going to be fresh in people's mind when they're out there saying, like, thank you, Philadelphia. And people are like, boo! You ruined that ball for me!
I have got a different list from you guys almost entirely. I have Abreu and I have Scott Rolen. I think those are the two most obvious. But again, I don't feel great about the Rolen pick, but you got to put Rolen on there. He was just a great player in this town. You look at his numbers, they're very comparable to Chase Utley's at the end of the day when you combine the defense and the offense and all that stuff. I have Manny Trio because he was such an integral part of those teams that won the division. He's kind of like Shane Victorino-ish. It's kind of like that kind of contributor to those teams. I think Victorino was a little bit more impactful than Manny Trio, but Manny Trio made a bunch of all-star teams and was the MVP of the 1980 National League Championship Series, that epic five-game series against the Astros. And so he was generally regarded until Chase Utley came along as the best second baseman in team history. So I'm going to put Manny Trio on the Wall of Fame. And then I'm putting the two coaches/managers on my list. I'm putting Jim Fregosi on there, and I'm putting Rich Doobie on the Wall of Fame. Because
I
don't think
you would.
Yeah, some of these position coaches don't get enough recognition for what they do. And Rich Doobie was the pitching coach during that long 5-year run from 2007 to 2011, when the Phillies had all that success. He won a World Series with a starting rotation that wasn't the most talented in the world. You had Cole Hamels and then a bunch of other guys. I mean, that 2008 team, that still had real garbage pitcher.
Freddie Garcia.
Yeah. No, it was Adam Eaton. I'm thinking it was Adam Eaton was on that, was pitching for that. He made 16, 17 starts for that 2008.
He's got a World Series ring, John.
He does. I know this.
He doesn't feel bad about it.
No, he probably shows it to people at parties. It's just disgraceful.
Probably Ruben Amaro does.
Yeah, I'll bet you he does. It's just wrong.
Nobody's going to his parties.
That's right. But I'm putting Rich Doobie. I'm going to allow Rich Doobie to move. He's not going to get a spot on the Wall of Fame more than likely, but I want to put him in the final five here because I think he was one of the more effective pitching coaches probably in team history. And Jim Fregosi, the dearly departed Fregosi who got the team to the 1993 World Series. I do still think he messed up game six by leaving Mitch Williams in there. And so I'm still a little bit cross at Jim Fregosi, but I got to tell you, he was the perfect manager for that team, and I just have a warm spot in my heart for Jim Fregosi. That was, you know, during the heyday of my time rooting for the team. So
can I say something?
Yeah, you may.
I'm actually astonished that none of us have even said the name Placido Polanco during this entire.
Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, I never really got into Placido Polanco. He blocked Chase Utley for the first couple years he was here. And then when he came back, he had I think his first season was really good. And then after that, he just kind of frustrated me a little bit.
He was their answer for the revolving door at third base. Like in their infield, that was the missing link that they just didn't have a third baseman in that hallowed infield. Then he came back and he hit .298 in 2010, and he hit .277 and was an all-star in 2011. He won a gold glove that year.
That's true. He was good.
He was in his mid-30s.
What players do you want on the wall? You want players who are beloved, who have a personality and a history. Placido Polanco's history is he blocked Chase Utley and then came back and was good.
You guys are making it sound like he stood in the tunnel barring the way, preventing Chase Utley from taking the field. He was doing his job because he was the Phillies' second baseman.
I hate him for it. I don't really. He's just
grabbing Chase Utley by the ankle and like, no, don't go out there.
I just think he doesn't inspire strong feelings, and you need players on the wall, I think, inspire strong feelings. I feel like this next phase of Phillies fandom is going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, Justin, you outlined it a little by saying, you know, this next, you know, this, the players that they're looking to put in now, they're going to make for some interesting Wall of Fame ballots because they're some, you know, it's a lot like what we see now. It's a few players we know, but it's, you know, guys from a period of time that wasn't all that great for the Phillies. You know, there are, you know, things to be reckoned with, like Bobby Abreu and Scott Rolen. You know, seeing Philadelphia figure out how to welcome those guys back would be, I think, a good thing. Interesting and dangerous and risky, but I think largely a good thing. I have a lot more faith in our fandom than I once did.
So those are our picks, but who of these guys, who are the five that you think Philadelphia puts on that wall? Because I go to Abreu and Rolen like really quickly. I mean, how could that anger still be there to the point with that they wouldn't pick them to be on the wall?
I think
even just from name recognition.
Phillies fans would put Abreu on there. I don't think that they would necessarily rush to put Rolen.
I think you're right.
I agree with you on that one. But I do think Abreu would go on there. I think Bake McBride would probably get a lot of votes among
Fregosi,
the older school people.
Definitely.
Fregosi for sure.
Fregosi. I think Fregosi's a good one.
Yeah, and I think Glanville, Polanco would both probably, just because, you know, the younger fans recognize those names. So you're right. There's probably, you know, maybe Rolen sneaks in there as like the number five guy. You know what I mean? But I agree with you. I think the fan anger towards Scott Rolen is still real and still palpable. I agree with you. I think that's very true.
Because he actively hated the city. Like, Bobby Abreu just did his job and people didn't like how he did it. Like, Rolen actively hated on the city and wanted to get the hell out. And so, like, that is hard to get over. I still would love to see the Phillies attempt this and see how the fan base would react. I think I would just want to watch the whole thing.
All I'm interested in is the reaction. Absolutely.
Give me chaos. Give me chaos. Bring me the chaos. All right, we're going to wrap. We went a little long this week on the podcast, but that's cool because we're talking Phillies baseball, everybody. Justin, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I mean, just we're entering the home stretch here. So very soon, pitchers and catchers will report, and then we will realize that that means nothing and be just as upset as before.
Indeed. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
Come on my Twitter account on Sunday. I tweeted the link to my commercials grading. I did that live as the game was going on. Please check it out. Read. Tell me what you think. I talked a lot about commercials, and I don't think I agreed with some of the consensus out there. So let me know what you think.
All right. Please do that. Check that out for Liz. Make sure you go to her Twitter feed, at Liz Rocher. Also, if you're not following Justin on Twitter, follow him at Justin_Clue. And folks, that will do it for episode number 254 of Hittin' Season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And we will talk to you all next time on this fine podcast right here on Hittin' Season.